It's long overdue, but it's finally here. It is your season-ending Marquette basketball unofficial podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. It is Scrambled Eggs, and welcome in, everyone. I'm Joe McCann, and Phil Bush is here with you. Phil, we needed a few weeks to decompress after the sadness of the end of the Marquette season, but I think I'm ready to talk about it.
Yeah, I listened to Let It Go on repeat for about 1,000 times, and I'm finally over it and ready to discuss.
Yeah, we've cooled off. Marquette has a new recruit on board, Marcus Howard, a point guard from Nevada. We're going to talk about him.
Breaking news banner.
I know. We actually held off a little bit because we were anticipating some breaking news for a while, but as far as guys leaving and whatnot. But we think enough has been out there for a week, so I think it's a good time to talk about Marquette season ending and now what it means for the offseason. But Phil, I'll just talk briefly about the end of Marquette season. And, you know, the Big East tournament was certainly nothing unexpected the way it ended for Marquette. But I think, you know, people get upset when you use the word disappointment when talking about a season. But for me, any season with Marquette basketball that ends with no postseason play at all certainly has some level of disappointment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and there's disappointment. There's two different versions of disappointment, right? Not living up to expectations, which this season partially had, and then there's disappointment over not making any postseason at all. I think it's entirely fair considering the investment Marquette puts into the program and the amount of fan engagement and participation to expect Marquette to go to a postseason virtually every, I'm not saying NCAAs every time, but NCAAs every time, but virtually every season they should go to some form of postseason with the type of product, and this represents the third year in a row we've been left out.
Yeah, and you know, Wojo talked about that. I listened to his season-ending podcast with Steve the Homer True, and you know, he talked about, yeah, he's never going to be satisfied sitting at home during the postseason, and he said that. None of the players feel that way. They feel that, you know, not making the NIT is a successful season by any stretch of the imagination. But it certainly was a bummer that they did not get to play in the postseason. Henry Ellenson didn't get to play in the postseason. And so that was a bummer. You know, I was looking forward to possibly trying one of those other tournaments. The Vegas 16 sounded interesting, and then we found out that nobody wanted to play in that thing, and it was just looked like just a terrible field. And the Ruby Q over there on Anonymous Eagle wrote a blog about how no one goes to the CBI either.
Right.
So I get why Marquette passed on all other postseason tournaments, because you don't want to have to pay to play and all that stuff. So, but still, you know, I would have hoped that Marquette would have been able to put together at least an NIT season. But I guess when you look back through what the team did this year, you know, they did some good things, and you know, they came up short in a few regards, and there were just some games that really were just absolute killers when it came to trying to put together a resume worthy of any postseason play. And the ones that stand out, obviously, losing to DeBall at home is one that just felt like a season-crushing loss. And then, you know, you have, if the Creighton and Belmont games at home went the other way, Marquette probably would have had at least a respectable resume to at least get some NIT consideration. But, you know, it was just some small margin. They've just had such a small margin of error with the schedule that they put together, and I think those home losses ended up costing them a chance at postseason play at the end.
Right. I mean, there's probably two schools of thought that are really related, but, you know, people argue, well, Marquette didn't do the things they needed to do on the court, notably winning enough games to put themselves in a position to get to the NIT. And then the other school of thought is, well, the schedule is really terrible, so that held them back, so they had no room to take chances or to have bad losses on the schedule. But I mean, what the fact is that in the regular season they went 19-12, which, I mean, the magic number has always been historically 20. I mean, there's no real rhyme or reason. It just feels like 20 wins gets you into a postseason. But even if they had 20 wins, they weren't getting into the NIT. So while they didn't produce well enough on the court, that schedule just really, really gave them some trouble. And one of the things that I think there's a lot of positive to take away from the season overall. I think the individual players, you saw, you know, if it weren't for Henry Ellenson, everyone would be talking about Hanif Cheatham and what a great season he had. And Tracy Carter struggled early, came on late, you know, really showed that he can be the point guard of the future, in my opinion. you know, and overall a young team really showed some promise. Now, the one thing that I will say from a negative that's really concerning to me is the last, if you count the two Big East games and the last two regular season, well, really the last three regular season games, Villanova, Georgetown, Butler, then St. John's and Xavier, Marquette's defense gave up at the lowest level 87 points in a game. They gave up 89, 87, 95, 93 to a lowly St. John's and 90 to Xavier. That's a lot of point. Now, you may say, and this is maybe the argument and a bit of a rambling statement here, but that maybe is the argument for no postseason like the CBI or the Vegas 16. Maybe the team just, they were so young and inexperienced, they broke down late. You know, they're not used to that.
Maybe they did.
Schedule.
And Wojo even said, he just felt like the team was tired because they started their season early with you know, the trip to Italy and stuff, which honestly at the time seemed like a good idea, right?
I still think it was a good idea.
Oh, I do too, because this was supposed to be an all-in season, right?
Right.
This was the one run with Henry Ellenson. Let's get plenty of practices in early and see if this team can get ready and gel and get the freshman rookie mistakes, you know, try to work those out early and then try to have a good season. Obviously, it didn't work out, but I thought it was still a good plan. But I think, considering they had been going at it since July, and then there probably just wasn't too much excitement over, you know, playing in some garbage tournament against teams that, you know, no Power 5 teams, really. They were not going to play any Power 5 teams in any of those tournaments. So it just wasn't exciting, and there's really nothing to play for. So I get why they shut it down. I totally get it. But
yeah. Well, but and I mean, the one thing that'd be interesting, and you can't do this sort of thing, but, you know, given how, you know, I just kind of railed about the defense late in the season, but given that the team kind of gelled and came together and started to play better, you wonder if the team at the end of the season played a team like was the team that played Belmont or the team that played at Georgetown, if those don't turn into wins versus losses, which is kind of my way of saying, hey, you know, the team's on the upward trend. If they carried that forward into next season, then they really should be in good shape, because you can point at a couple of things, you know, that were really positive. Hanif Cheatham, Tracy Carter, you know, obviously Henry Ellenson, Luke Fisher, even though he had foul trouble, was much better this season than last season. But there's also some things that were unexpectedly negative, like, well, Henry Ellenson's likely gone. Dwayne Wilson certainly didn't perform up to expectations given his previous season. You know, so there's some areas.
Sandy Cohen struggled.
Yeah, that was the other one. Sandy Cohen just completely, I don't know if his brain just locked up or what, but just completely disappeared from where he even was last year.
Right.
You know, and Juwan Johnson was much improved this year and was really a revelation as well. Between him and Hanif Cheatham, it's kind of an argument of which do you highlight more. But, you know, so if going into next year, if the bad can be improved on or the not good can be improved on, I think we've got some, you know, we've got some real opportunity, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's kind of what as we kind of turn the page now and look into what Marquette may do next year. Before we start breaking down the roster, we touched on the schedule a little bit, and it was kind of breaking news, and then it turned into, whoa, hold on there. But John Rothstein from CBS Sports tweeted that Utah and Marquette had agreed to a home-and-home beginning this year in Salt Lake City, but both Marquette and Utah said, hold your horses there. So apparently it hasn't been official yet, but it is exciting that Marquette is hopefully at least working on this to improve the non-conference schedule. And, you know, we've beat the non-conference schedule to death basically since it came out last summer, and for good reason, because I think in the end it was one of the factors in Marquette not getting any postseason.
Well, it was, but probably the biggest factor. We talked off pod, if you will. If you run the math, you know, if you say, okay, they win the DePaul and Creighton games at home, like we just magically turn those into victories, that doesn't help the RPI nearly as much as changing four or five of those 300-plus games into 225 to 250 RPI games. All of a sudden, you know, you make that change, and again, the difference in skill level between a 300-plus and a 250 is relatively negligible. It's really just math at that point that you're playing, not a team of any real caliber, you know, it makes it much more likely, almost, in my opinion, almost a guaranteed we would have gotten into the NIT had we not had the schedule we had.
Yeah, you look at the teams that were in that Vegas 16, you know, and say, oh, man, these teams are terrible. I can't believe, you know, these teams are playing in the postseason. It was something like, you know, East Tennessee.
Old Dominion.
In Fort Wayne. But those teams, they're like RPI, or, you know, RPI is like 150 to 185 or something. So play teams like that.
Right, exactly.
You know, so like that would be an improvement over SWAC teams or Maine or San Jose State. You know, like I said before, it wasn't so much that they scheduled a 300 RPI team here and there. I don't mind that much, but it looked like they went for the 300 RPI value pack.
Correct.
They were shopping at the non-conference store and went straight for the clearance rack.
They got a 7-for-1 deal.
Yeah, instead of shopping around a little bit. And you know, the thing is, we beat it to death, and both, I don't know, Wojo and Mike Broeker have explained some things, like, okay, a lot of teams don't want to play Marquette because they were coming off a 13-win season. They had trouble finding teams that were interested, that weren't sure what the roster was going to be like, so there was a concern there. Well, okay, I get all that, and that's fine. You know exactly what you have going in next year. And you have for a while, so hopefully the schedule will be a little bit better. And Broeker, the Utah thing aside, Broeker did hint in that article, that interview he did with Paint Touches last fall, that the Notre Dame game, they were at least working on it, and I would love to see the Notre Dame game come back.
Yep.
Because it would be, especially if you can arrange it so the home and away alternates with Wisconsin. So on the years when Marquette goes to Madison, Notre Dame comes to Milwaukee. And then on years when Bucky comes to Milwaukee, then Marquette goes to South Bend. So if you could set it up that way, I think that would be ideal, and just have those two rivalry games every year and then just fill out the rest of the schedule from there. But the hope is, all right, instead of 7 300 RPI teams, I would say take out 4 of those, okay, and put in 2 to 3, you know, like I said, you know, a Fort Wayne or a East Tennessee, something like that, that's in the 180-ish to 250-ish RPI group, and then add one good team, you know, like a name team, like Utah would be amazing, Notre Dame would be great, because you know the thing is. The attendance numbers were down a little bit this year, but as I mentioned this before, how many home games, especially in November and December, were really that exciting to go to? You know, like there just weren't that many. So at least if you're alternating Wisconsin and Notre Dame, there's always at least one rivalry game that's going to fill the place every year.
Right. Well, and I mean, I selfishly, as a season ticket holder, I want the best possible games, right? Because I'm right. Paying for games, so I want the most value. But I almost kind of ignore the number of people in the stands simply because for all sports, attendance is down, because it turns out sitting on your couch drinking, you know, $1.50 beer that you bought a six-pack of has some appeal over, you know, spending an hour getting to the game, getting in seats, spending $9 for a beer, and not having instant replay or Twitter easily available. You know, it's just the nature of where we're going as a society, that going to live games isn't as attractive as watching them at home.
It's true.
So, you know, attendance, yeah, okay. It's important, especially for Marquette, given the revenue needs versus what they invest in the program. But, you know, it's more about, again, reaching those postseason goals and preparing the team for the conference season and the postseason. I mean, look at the Pac-12. The Pac-12, and it's not fair to say this because, you know, one loss tournaments are not a good measure of how awesome you are or not.
The Big East knows that quite well.
Yeah, the Big East is familiar with that argument, but look at the Pac-12. The Pac-12, and to a certain extent, the Mountain West, those conferences got it from a scheduling standpoint, and they did everything they could to make their schedule as attractive as possible, or their results as attractive as possible, while minimizing the risk that their teams would get bad losses. And as a consequence, the Pac-12 was, I mean, based on their performance in the NCAA tournament, you could make an argument that conference did not deserve as many bids as they got, nor as high a seeds as they got. Mm-hmm. But because they had the right numbers, you know, they got through the non-conference well, they scheduled it well, they played the RPI.
Pac-12 game. Loves the RPI, man.
Yeah,
And, they love it.
And as a result, it paid off. You know, so you'd like to see the Big East maybe get a little smarter and all the teams within the Big East get a little bit smarter to help them out. Because in the non-conference, we really should be fans of each, you know, every other program. We want the Big East to go undefeated in non-conference.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, like everybody gets to Big East play 12-0, 13-0. How great would that look?
You know, I mean, and it nearly happened, you know, no thanks to DePaul, but it nearly happened a couple of years ago where we were, what, like the inaugural season of the Big East, it was what, like 30, well, Marquette was also part of the issue, but it was like 33-4 or 33-5 or something like that.
Yeah, I seem to remember something like that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, when you have a legit league and legit teams, I don't think you should be too afraid to schedule aggressively. And, you know, you said the Pac-12 played it right, where they had a nice balance of legit non-conference opponents, like name teams, plus they didn't go too low on the RPI to bring down the rest of the league. You know, I forgot about this, but I wanted to mention it briefly. Did you see that New York Times article a couple of weeks ago about the Big East, suggesting the Big East should expand way west and add
Gonzaga and St. Mary's?
St. Mary's. And, you know, I think, you know, in a vacuum, that sounds great, and the whole basketball league only thing, but I just don't think logistically that would ever work, because I don't know what league would say, sure, Gonzaga, we'll house your volleyball and soccer and track teams. You go off and you play basketball in the Big East and don't give us anything. That sounds great. I don't think any league would really be willing to do that. So if you're going to do that, you have to bring in all the non-revenue sports, and then for all the East Coast teams like Villanova and St. John's having to fly their volleyball teams to Spokane to play Gonzaga. I just don't see that happening. Now, I would love to play Gonzaga.
Right. Well, here's the thing. And who was the AD that said that, kind of like further sparked things by saying, oh, well, we're going to talk about it.
It was Creighton's AD.
Yeah, it was Creighton's AD. And they have a vested interest, right? They're the team furthest west, so they can, you know, and so they have an interest in that, so they kind of sparked it. But listen, at the end of the day, I hate to be like a cynical business person, you know, because – you know, we're first of all, we're all fans, and the people that would advocate for conference expansion are thinking as fans, right? They're thinking how great the game would be, and right, you know, and what the attention would be. But unless the revenue dollars that Fox Sports is providing for the individual school, or, you know, to the Big East as a whole, unless that goes up by an equal or greater amount per school,
right,
then we get right now, there is zero reason to expand. Like, it should be a non-starter. Unless,
yeah, and the thing is, I do kind of love having a 10-team league where you play everyone twice. And see, that's a thing that I think you should consider if the Big East were to, say, add 2 to 4 teams and go to an East and West division. Guess which division Marquette's in?
The West.
And so that means fewer games with St. John's,
the
Georgetown,
classic Big East,
Villanova. That means they don't get there. There will be some years when they would not be showcased in the big markets like D.C., Philadelphia, New York. So that's something to keep in mind. Because, you know, I know living in Big 12 country myself, that was one thing that upset Nebraska when the Big 12 got a little too big, because Nebraska's had to stop playing Oklahoma every year.
Right. Right.
And so they were upset about it. So,
well,
they moved.
And the other part of it is, if you expand west, I mean, you can look at the Big Ten when they split into East-West divisions. Look at what they put in the East. I mean, that from a football perspective, that's a juggernaut. And in the West, I mean, that's, you know, I'm biased because I hate Wisconsin, but that's
perfectly acceptable here.
Yeah, that Western division is a crap sandwich. Mm-hmm. And who are you going to bring in the West, you know, for a competitive balance? Best case, I guess you could say, okay, expand to 12 and go to 2 6-team divisions. I don't really like those numbers. I think if you're going to do that, you got to go to like 14 or 16. So if you're bringing in more than 2 teams from the West after St. Mary's and Gonzaga, who are you grabbing? Like, who's right, who's going to improve? And the answer is not, oh, we'll get Utah and BYU for basketball only. No football schools. That's it.
No way.
I have 2 rules for any conference expansion that boxes must be checked before you expand. A, revenue increases or stays the same for each school. That box has to be checked. And no football schools.
Right.
I agree. Bringing in a football school, I don't care if they're going to house their football somewhere else, it will not lead to long-term stability. It's right, a deal breaker for me.
That's why you couldn't say like Notre Dame, you know, or something like that, because you know their football. There's always going to be offers on the table for football.
Right. UConn, I think, if they were being completely open and honest, I think they would say they hate being in the AAC and would love to be in the Big East, you know, and which is ironic considering they made the decisions they made for the football program. But, you know, I wonder if they were able, would they ditch the football program to get back into the Big East?
No, I don't think they would. I think they would much rather try to talk their way into the ACC or the Big 12.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, it's funny, the UConn blog actually posted an April Fool's joke saying that it's time to kill football and join the Big East, and there was just, and it got really sarcastic as you kept reading. It said, you know, if you lose to SMU on ESPN, it's everywhere, but if you lose to St. John's on Fox Sports Net, it's a much small, on Fox Sports One, it's a much smaller audience. So it got really snarky, but it was funny. It made me laugh, but. You know, regarding all those West Coast teams, I would much rather organize some kind of Big East versus the West showcase, like in the non-conference. I think you could find 10 teams from the Central time zone and West that would be down for it, because all these teams are always saying, we can't get anybody to play us, we want to play somebody. But I think you could get teams like Gonzaga, Wichita State, St. Louis, San Diego State, UNLV, BYU, St. Mary's, get like 10 teams and just have a showcase. I know we already have the Gavitt games, but in my opinion, again, I'm speaking as a fan, of course, but I think there's room in the schedule for another showcase, like, you know, in sometime in December, and have a Big East versus the World type thing. And I think that you could find 10 quote-unquote, I know UNLV has football, but this isn't a conference alignment thing. This is just a non-conference thing. I think UNLV is more closely associated as a basketball school. So I think you could get teams like that involved. And I'm really getting off topic here, but I would much rather have a showcase against teams like Gonzaga and Wichita State and St. Mary's than actually talk about them joining the league.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's two things at work. One, I mean, Creighton has a vested interest in wanting to expand, but that's not going to happen. And two, you know, newspapers need to have things to write about. So there's the Big East expansion, I think, is always going to be a fertile topic, because there's an argument to be made that, well, if this is the premier basketball-only conference, then there should be more, you know, throw more teams into it. Plus, Gonzaga, I mean, they're wandering out in the desert. I mean, they desperately want to be in a conference that has some meaning and gets them connections to the East Coast.
Yeah, for their basketball program, they would love it, but logistically, I just wouldn't.
Amount of investment you would need to put into non-revenue teams. Now, you could make an argument, if this were to ever happen, and we're getting really deep here, but if you're ever going to expand west, you know, I'd almost want to say, like, hey, let's all agree on a neutral location halfway in between where all our non-revenue sports play.
Yeah. Tonight, UNLV, or tonight, Gonzaga takes on Marquette in Omaha, Nebraska.
Exactly. Like, you fly 2 hours, we'll fly 2 hours, and wherever that lands us, then that's what we'll do.
In front of dozens of adoring fans. Actually, in front of absolutely no one.
Well, it may, at this point, doing it that way, it may be cheaper to, like, just charter a commercial jet, put the team in the front and fans in the back, and fly 2 hours.
Oh, gosh. Well, we went way too far on that topic. But long story short, I don't see the Big East expanding, but, you know, you can look at it, and if the dollars make sense, sure, go for it. But as we look more into the future of Marquette basketball, Phil, the thing that has been, I would say, a done deal for about 2 years, looks like it is going to be official this week, as Henry Ellenson is expected to announce he's leaving Marquette. Adrian Wojnarowski over there at The Vertical, Woj, as everyone simply calls him, I don't want to confuse him with our coach, but Woj dropped a Woj bomb this week, saying that Henry Ellenson is deep in agent negotiations and should be announcing his intentions to turn pro. Should be shocking to absolutely no one.
Except,
you know, this
those
is something
who have convinced themselves that Marquette is so awesome he can't help but want to stay and give up millions of dollars.
Yes. I admire people who have been trying to convince me for weeks, maybe months, that, you know, it'd just be a mistake.
He's not ready. Everyone projects him in the top 10, but he's not ready.
Yeah, you know, he'd be, you know, we'd be so good with him next year. Yes, we would.
Right.
But
so,
that's not what.
So would probably about 40 other teams.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, we personally, I thought he was a one and done the day he committed, and I think many people are like me. I'm certainly not on an island.
No,
there.
Not at all.
You know, and so I went in when he committed. I'm like, well, we got 1 year with him, and you know, I'm disappointed that we didn't get to the postseason with him. But Henry had an amazing run at Marquette. Statistically, he is probably the best freshman Marquette has ever had, and. Please, I would like to think most of our listeners are relatively smart people, Phil.
Yeah, I fashion that they are. I mean, they're listening to such an intelligent podcast.
Please be kind on Twitter when it's official, and just wish him the best and thank him for his year of service to Marquette University. He doesn't owe you or Marquette anything more than what he has given. So I salute Henry Ellenson for the year he gave to Marquette. He gave it everything he had. Marquette just did not have a great enough team around him to take him further. But it's been a nice year. I wish we could have done more. But I wish Henry Ellenson a lot of luck. And I hope he lands anywhere except with the Lakers in the NBA because he doesn't deserve that.
Yes. Well, now, the question that did cross my mind, because it's been a topic of discussion. I don't know if you saw the news. Every player for Kentucky, including their walk-ons, have declared for the NBA draft because the new rules say that, which is kind of an amped up version of the old rules that changed a couple of years ago and then it went to nothing and now it's back to something, basically say that any player every year now, up to three times, I think, 3 years essentially.
Yes, you can test the waters every year. It used to be, you mentioned the old rules, you should be able to only do that once. So if you dip your toe in and tested it as a freshman, you could not do it as a sophomore or junior.
Right.
And, but now you can do it every year.
And that's what Dominic James did his freshman year.
Yes.
Which, looking back on, you know, for his sake, may have made sense to go at that point because his stock...
Did he declare without an agent?
He declared without an agent his freshman year.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't remember. I remember Jarrell McNeil did that as a junior.
Correct, but DJ did it as a freshman and decided to come back, if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay.
But anyway, so now they can test the waters. They can declare, not hire an agent, as long as they withdraw their name by May 24th. So they can go out and do the draft camps and get feedback from the executives in the NBA where they might go. So in thinking about it, one, I bring this up for two reasons. One, nobody should panic if names like Hanif Cheatham or Luke Fisher or whoever else show up as going to these draft camps or quote-unquote declaring without an agent. They absolutely should. I mean, think of it as free coaching for these guys, right? I mean, they're getting...
Yeah. I mean, they really don't have anything to lose. I mean, unless, like, they have to pay for a plane ticket to go to these things. Other than that, isn't it worth it, you know, just to get a little feedback? And that's what Calipari said. You know, it's like, hey, it's a great experience, even for our walk-ons who will never sniff the NBA. And I think the only people really annoyed by it are NBA scouts who are going to be going to these workouts with about 1,000 kids. And about, you know, 10% of which actually may have a shot of being drafted or playing in the league one day. And so I've read scouts saying, look, just contact me in May when this is over. And, like, everyone's back in school. But, you know, from that respect, I don't think, you know, it's not really hurting anybody. I mean, the kids get some good feedback. They got to kind of test the waters. And, yeah, I would not be surprised if, besides Ellenson, I think Ellenson will probably just go all in and sign with an agent right away.
Well, and I wanted to talk about that, but we'll get back to that.
But, yeah, I would not be surprised if three or four Marquette players, besides Ellenson, decide to just go to an NBA workout and see what happens. And then when it's determined that they would not be drafted, come on back to Marquette and see what they need to work on, especially a guy like Luke Fisher, who only has 1 year of eligibility left and could hear from some scouts, look, we're not going to take you now, but if you can improve this, we might take a look at you next year.
Yeah, and it gives you another perspective and a list of things to improve on. And, you know, and one of the things, and at the end of the day, I personally think it's a good thing for the student athletes, because one of the things I have always hated about, especially the NBA, is kids declaring before they're ready, but either for financial reasons or, you know, say Vander Blue, you know, his situation, he just really wanted to go to the NBA. I don't know that it would have made a difference in Vander's case, but perhaps he declares without an agent, hears from a bunch of execs saying, you ain't ready yet, kid, go back to school for a year, and then come out. If it keeps a kid in school a year longer by having him hear this from the you know, the executives themselves that that you're just not ready yet, that's a positive thing, right? Instead of a kid going declaring early, not getting drafted, next thing you know, he doesn't have a college degree. You know, he's out in the cold. He's not in school. That I think is a negative outcome that we want to try and avoid. So I think overall, it's a good thing.
By the way, you mentioned Vander Blue. Matt Velasquez had a really good interview with him.
Yes, that was a great article.
It was really good. Go check it out. Go back through Matt's feed. He has a really good interview. Vander basically still saying, really don't have any regrets. It was time for me to go. But who knows if he had stayed another year, if it would have been much different. But he's having a heck of a year in the D League. I hope he gets a shot here.
Yeah. To play with the NBA team. The compelling thing out of the article is, and this is why I say I don't think the executives would have mattered if he had declared but not hired an agent, was even his mom cut him off for about a week and a half because she was so upset with his decision to leave school. But be that as it may, the other thing I wanted to come back to is, you know, we talked about Adrian Wojnarowski. I can never pronounce it.
It's Wojnarowski. The thing is, I always just call him Woj because everyone says Woj has got some news. Oh, Woj bomb, Woj. Right. But Adrian Wojnarowski from
the guy at that vertical thing.
Yes.
He mentioned that Henry's looking for agents, and Ben Simmons has already done that, and a few other players have already done that. You know, given the new rule, I mean, there is a scenario, I suppose. What if, and knock on wood, I hope this doesn't happen, but what if you're a kid like Henry who declares and hires an agent, you're now ineligible, and you blow out your knee in draft camp or something like that? Is there really an inherent value with these new rules of hiring an agent? Do they do enough for you that any risk of essentially declaring yourself ineligible and then not being able to be drafted for whatever reason is worth it? I mean, is it worth hiring an agent in these new rules?
I see what you're saying, but I think if you're definitely going pro, thing is, even if you have a bad knee injury, unless it's something catastrophic with like nerve damage, like that linebacker from Notre Dame had, Jalen Smith, I don't think it's going to be so bad that your stock would drop all that much, because most of these guys come back from torn ACLs and torn Achilles in less than a year. You know, like Nerlens Noel tore his ACL and was still taken in the top 6 or 8, you know. If you're all in and you're definitely going pro, and you have an agent you trust, especially a guy who's going to give you an advance on some money because he knows he's about to make a lot on you, I could see why you would go ahead and sign, especially if you're like, man, I'm done with school. I'm ready to be a pro. And I think Henry is in that state. Whereas it could be literally 1,000 other guys declaring for the draft nationwide when there are only 60 spots, which is hilarious. But we'll see how many guys declare, both from Marquette and nationwide. I expect a lot of guys to do it, because there's really not much to lose.
Right. Well, and so you have to anticipate that, Henry will hire an agent. It would be interesting if Henry declares but doesn't hire an agent. I don't know what that means or what that would say, but that would be interesting, right? That would be some sort of compelling, I can try and read between the lines type of thing.
Yeah, I think you're trying to talk yourself into him coming back at that point, and I think that's just not going to happen.
Well, that's what I mean, though. We should anticipate him hiring an agent. If he doesn't hire an agent, that just makes speculation ridiculous, right?
Yeah, and I think from a perspective that I think, because Wojo's out there trying to recruit power forwards, trying to recruit some help for next year, and I think if you have Henry Ellenson already signed up and already definitely gone, you can definitely promise playing time and maybe get a commitment a little earlier, possibly. So I think if Henry's definitely gone, and I'm sure he is, just go ahead and sign with an agent and, get a guy you trust who's going to take care of you and your family and all that stuff.
Well, and they're going to help you navigate the process, and they'll be the ones facilitating talk, because these scouts are going to have 1,000 players to wade through. Not that they wouldn't recognize Henry Ellenson's
and,
number.
And, the agents can help organize private workouts with teams, right? These are the guys who, the teams picking in the top 10 are all going to call the agent and say, look, we want to work out your guy. And so I think that's a big reason why you sign with an agent, a reputable agent, who's going to get you workouts with the teams picking in the top 5. Say, look, you're going to want to consider my guy at your spot. So I think it's best that Henry goes ahead and gets an agent. So.
Right. And Henry would be, assuming it's drafted top 10, he would be, number 2 or number 3 in the last 15 years that have gone in the top 10 from Marquette?
In the top 10, the only
other one is Dwayne Wade. I was thinking Wade, Jimmy Butler's playing like a top 10, but
yeah, I mean, we've had since Wade was drafted, we've had two other first round picks. Lazar and Jimmy were both the last pick in the first round, and then Crowder and DJO were both second round picks. And everyone else has been undrafted. Wesley Matthews was undrafted, surprisingly enough. You know, McNeil and James were undrafted. No, Novak was a second round pick. And then Travis Diener was a second round pick. And I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
Yeah, and then we've had guys like Dwight Bikes work his way into the league as an undrafted free agent. Vander Blue's got a cup of coffee with a couple teams. And yeah, so Marquette currently has five guys in the league with Wade, of course, Matthews, Butler, Crowder, and Novak, who is out for the season with the Bucks. We'll see if he's in the league next year. But if Novak is in the league next year, we'll have six Marquette guys in the league next year.
Pretty good numbers.
And who knows? Maybe Vander will finally get his shot because he is just right there. I mean, he is the
definition the mind that he's that there.
He is the definition of a fringe NBA player, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is just killing it in the D League. But he just can't get a sniff in the NBA. Jarrell McNeil was the same way, honestly. He actually had a pretty similar career track to Vander so far, where he was just crushing it in the D-League. He got a 10-day contract here or there, but just couldn't stick and eventually went to Europe. It sounds like Vander is resisting going to Europe for now. He's going to keep chasing the NBA until he kind of realizes it's not going to happen. Then maybe he might consider Europe as he gets later into his 20s. But I think Vander is going to stick in the D-League as long as he can, as long as he's like dominating and can hopefully get a call up with the NBA team. So
it'll be compelling over next season. But yeah, so, and I think again, bottom line, this, we spent 10 minutes stating the obvious. Henry's going to leave. He's going to hire an agent, and now it's up to Wojo to. I mean, with Marcus Howard, who we'll touch on here in a minute, with him in the fold, we're set everywhere but power forward for the next year or two at least.
Yeah,
so we got to get a power forward.
And see, that's the thing that I want to talk about here briefly. We've had one of our longer podcasts so far, but we might trip the hour mark this time. But anyway, yeah, the big thing, if you look at Marquette's roster for next year, the one glaring hole is power forward, because as we've said before, Fisher and Helt probably aren't going to play together, both because skill set and need,
right.
Really.
And fouls.
Right. So, because otherwise you're looking at a starting power forward as the roster currently stands of Wally Ellinson, the freshman Sam Hauser, who was probably more of a three, and
Sandy Cohen.
And Sandy Cohen, who was definitely not a four.
And has forgotten how to hit
a layup. He did rebound a little better last year, but he's still not a four. And then Sakar Anum, who is, again, more of a 2-3 guy. So, you know, you would hope Marquette could add some size, but it's easier said than done. It's like Wojo's probably sitting there saying, look, guys, I'm trying to add somebody. Like, he's out there. The only guys I've really seen Marquette connected to, big one was Bruno Fernando, who's a big man at Montverde Academy in Florida. He committed this past week to SMU, so there's that.
That's not going to happen.
Fun with the ponies. And so that was a guy that, you know, Marquette had been connected to a lot because they definitely had offered him. The only other guy I've seen Marquette even connected to has been this junior college big man named Cavell Bigby Williams. And by connected to, I mean one tweet where it said Stan Johnson went and watched him play.
Well, you know, so it's listen, not like when you're grasping for straws, anything will
know work. That's the only thing I have, though. I haven't seen many other guys. And then there's Khalif Young, who's a high school player that I guess Marquette has offered. But again, Marquette's not a favorite to land him. And it looks like Cavell Bigby Williams is going to commit to Oregon any day now. So,
you know, the compelling thing is, again, because I think it's an open secret that Henry's leaving. So Wojo has a lot of playing time and opportunity to offer.
Right.
And so that's kind of an interesting thing. And the other thing, one point of emphasis I want to make is we kind of say traditionally, oh, the power forward, you know, we need to add height. The critical thing is not so much height. Height's nice, that's fine. But the defining attribute we need is rebounding.
Yes.
We were a average to poor rebounding team this past season with Henry Ellinson as our best rebounder.
And NBA level rebounder.
Right. NBA elite Kevin Love type rebounding and passing. That's gone next year. So we're going to go from average to poor to like homeless man's level type type rebounding without a good rebounder. You know, so I don't want to say it's all about size, because if you can get a Lazar Hayward that can...
Please, if you know one, tell me where he is.
Right, right.
If Wojo's saying, oh, yo, is there one of those growing on trees somewhere? Please tell me where he is.
Yeah, ask Siri. See if she knows where one is.
Cookie Monster, ask Siri, where is a power forward?
I have to say, as much as I hate the repeat commercials for the NCAA tournament, that commercial cracks me up every time.
It is absolutely fantastic. But, again, easier said than done. I mean, there has to be guys interested. And, of course, the big thing is the grad transfer wire. I say wire just because I like waiver wire.
like it's the NFL free agent market.
Right. But, anyway, there are literally hundreds of guys out there. Now, how many would actually fit in with Marquette, I have no idea. But the only guys that would be guys of significance that would be eligible next year, there's probably not that many. I mean, there's a guy from Tulane. I don't know if he's going to be eligible next year or not, but he's averaged 11-8. I don't think he is eligible next year, actually. And then there's a guy, there's Savon Goodman from Arizona State, who has off the court troubles. So that kind of, like, Wojo has kind of shied away from guys like that in the past. So I don't know if he would even be on Marquette's radar.
But you do have the Stan Johnson connection.
There is that's the thing. If Stan Johnson vouches for him and say, look, he's going to be all right, then I think Wojo would listen. But I have no idea if Stan Johnson feels that way about Goodman.
Well, one point I want to make about that, because there's always the rumblings from the buzz era and some of the angst that, you know, some there were occasionally issues within the program under Buzz, and Wojo seems to represent a difference there. But the one thing I would say is, you know, as long as you don't have a team full of personal issues, if you've got one player you take a chance on, I think that's reasonable. I mean, one, it's kind of the Marquette mission, right? You know, do better for everyone. You know, so give a guy an opportunity to improve himself. So that's a positive thing. And you can take a chance with one or two players as long as you don't, you know, make a habit of it.
Right. Yeah, yeah. The thing is, if you have a team that is full of well-disciplined kids, you would hope that one guy who's had a little trouble might fall in line, say, look, this is how we do things here, you know. But, again, I don't even know if Marquette's even in the mix for him. The thing is, I was talking with you off pod, that was an interesting topic or interesting phrase I think you coined earlier. As we were talking off pod, the tough thing for Wojo in convincing these grad transfers, what is the main thing a grad transfer is probably looking for?
Well, if you ask Damon Lee, it's an opportunity to play in the tournament.
Yes, and that's exactly why he committed to Louisville and he got screwed there. But all these grad transfers, that at least the high-level ones, right, guys who are like Power 5 quality, they're looking to play in the tournament in their last year. And so Wojo has got to convince these guys, with you, we're a tournament team. And see, I think it's not that it's the toughest sell in the world, but you're talking about a team that didn't even make the NIT last year and is losing Henry Ellenson, but with you, we're a tournament team. And so that's the selling point he's got to make to these guys. And see, that's why I am a little pessimistic that Wojo is going to haul in a big time impact grad transfer this year. And that's why I think more likely it would be a junior college player with 2 years of eligibility left, or just get a freshman, just to add some size with a freshman somewhere.
Yeah, well, and it'll be interesting. Do we know, because I wholeheartedly agree with what you just said, is that there's a bigger sell, because we haven't been to a postseason tournament in 3 years. The players, no, there is not a player on the current roster for Marquette that has been to a postseason game other than the conference tournament.
Womp, womp.
Yeah, as painful a statement as that is. But do we know when typically we would see all of the grad transfers? You know, because I would anticipate there's a few players that haven't declared they're transferring yet. Because, like, as an example, most of those, we don't know if Henry's gone yet.
Yeah, I would imagine most of those would probably be done in early April, so they can, you know, take some visits and do, because I don't think many of them would drag it into the summer. You know, I would think they would probably like to get it done before final exams and all that. But
month, it's fair to say we should know. I would think either way, with a JUCO transfer or with a grad transfer, we should know this month if we're going to land somebody.
Yeah, maybe. And the thing is, we've seen guys commit in May or, you know, before, but I think we'd at least know the names that are out there and the guys Marquette is chasing. Now, maybe we wouldn't see a commitment until, you know, after graduation or, you know, in May sometime. So I think the thing is, the spring signing period starts in mid-April and then it goes, you know, into the summer. I mean, guys, you know, don't even necessarily need to sign a letter of intent, really. They just need to verbally commit and then show up on campus.
Do you think we see a little bit of a change? You know, we've talked in the past about Wojo's approach to recruitment seems to be very targeted, right? I mean, there's some coaches that are volume shoppers. They offer right. anyone. Buzz was kind of that way. He was mentioned with just about every player there was. Right. Whereas Wojo, it's kind of like Marcus Howard. Marquette was mentioned with Marcus Howard, you know, pretty much from the beginning, and that was the one player of import that Marquette seemed to be mentioned with. Do you think that method is kind of, given how urgent the need is at power forward with Henry gone, do you think Wojo just blankets the available players and says first one to declare gets the spot?
I think he will be involved and contact several, and then I think you got to gauge their interest too. And then the thing is, just because he has an offer doesn't mean he's not interested. You know, I think he could be talking to 4, 5, 6, 7 guys, and then, you know, narrow it down from there as to who gives you good feedback. And some guys may just say, Coach, I appreciate the interest, but I think I'm going somewhere else. And then you could just, you know, scratch him off the list and then, you know, narrow it down from there. I think he will contact several guys.
Yeah. Sure. I'm curious if we'll see a lot of guys being mentioned or not.
Yeah, I don't know, because it seems like most of that's been relatively tight-lipped, honestly.
Yeah.
It's harder to find news on Marquette recruits these days. I've noticed that. You know, like, there's not just a long list of guys, oh, Marquette's involved with this guy, that guy.
Yeah.
It seems like it's very targeted.
Well, that's interesting, because I always felt like it was the players themselves that kind of leaked that. But
yeah,
maybe it's more the coaching staff.
Yeah, yeah. Blessed to be offered by Marquette today. You know, you always see that on Twitter. Like, oh, Marquette's after this guy. But, yeah.
So maybe Marquette just doesn't make a lot of offers.
I don't think they do. I think they contact guys and they talk to them, but I think they're very patient when it comes to offers. I think that's just kind of their style. And so far, so good for the most part, because I think they've hauled in some good recruits. And on that note, we finally get to the thing we led off with about 40 minutes ago. Mark,
if you're still listening.
Yeah, thank you for still listening and hanging in. I hope Marcus Howard didn't tune into this and, like, waiting to hear his name in the podcast. Sorry to keep you waiting this long, buddy. But
I think he's got other things to do.
Yeah, he's like, oh, man, screw these guys. But no, Marcus Howard did commit to Marquette on Sunday, so that was good news. Yep, another guard, but this is a guy Marquette has been very hot after for a while. I would say he has probably been their number one priority since Henry committed.
Yes, totally.
Like after they got Henry Ellenson, I think their new number one priority was Marcus Howard, who, I mean, this is a guy who had a lot of national interest. He played for USA Basketball, and that tells me about something about how he is in relation to other guys his age, right? If USA Basketball is selecting him to play in the summer with other guys in his class, you know, he's a high level point guard, and he was ranked in the top 40 or so for 2017. But he has, according to his coach, I saw this online today. Adam Zagoria tweeted that his coach did say he is reclassifying to 2016, so he will be with Marquette this fall. So and again, we can see recruiting rankings and see where he ranks and stuff like that. But all you really need to know is that this has been a guy that Marquette has had in at the top. The top of its recruiting board for well over a year now, and they got him, and I think that's significant.
Yeah, it's going to be significant. Now, what's going to be, I think the positive, and you got to think that Wojo's been upfront with Marcus throughout this process. With Tracy Carter coming along, I mean, he struggled early. We all loved him out of Italy, and then he kind of fell flat a little bit in the non-conference. But especially late in the season, Tracy Carter has come on. We also have Andrew Rousey will be eligible and is slated to play a lot of point guard in the next season, and he'll be on the roster for the next 2 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. So there are, I would say, known quantities and probably reliable quantities at point guard next season So what that means is we can bring, you know, they had, Wojo had to throw Tracy Carter to the wolves this season because there just weren't, he and Hanif were the only options. I think this, with Marcus, Tracy, and Andrew Rousey, I think this says Hanif will not be playing point guard anymore unless there's some sort of matchup thing going on, which I think is ultimately a good, because Hanif is an off-ball guard. I mean, he is a tremendous two in the making. But it also means we can bring Marcus Howard along slowly. I mean, we don't have to force him to play 25, 30 minutes and commit a lot of turnovers and make a lot of mistake and potentially risk his confidence and his development. He can come along nicely next year, you know, kind of learn the ropes. And then, you know, in the following two or three years, then the team starts to become his.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, the depth, I think, hopefully the point guard issue is solved for next year. Because as you said, Tracy Carter, I saw more and more confidence in him as the season went along. And I think I expect that to continue into next year. And then we're all been excited about Rousey, who may be more of a combo guard than a point, but I still think he would be a better point guard than most of the other guys on the roster, including, and maybe even including Carter. And then now Howard comes into the mix, and this is just such a guy with such a high ceiling who could be a really good player in college. So, yeah, I certainly agree with you that Cheatham probably falls to fourth at highest on the point guard depth chart for next year. So I think he can continue to I think Cheatham will flourish as a two guard next year in what will almost certainly be a guard heavy lineup for Marquette. They'll probably be playing three or four guards quite often next year.
I mean there is the potential that Marquette goes the Villanova route, right? You know, that where it's four guards, one big, and tries to run teams and tries to flex teams. Sam Hauser's a shooter, you know, Rousey's a shooter, you know, Hanif is certainly a shooter.
And Howard has a good reputation as a shooter. We'll see how it translates to the college level, but he has a good reputation as a shooter.
Yeah, and maybe Sandy Cohen rediscovers that he was once a good shooter. You know, and I mean that tongue in cheek, but you know, so there's a lots of opportunities to play kind of a four out one in style. So it is going to be guard heavy. It just comes down to what that rebounding looks like, because that could get you're going to have to hope they can shoot really well, because we may not get a lot of rebounds if they miss.
Yeah, hey, you don't need offensive rebounds, man, if you're making everything. I guess that's the plan for next year.
That's just true, but you also can't make shots if you can never get the ball back until the other team scores.
Yeah, well, this is a trouble. This is
thank
trouble.
God, thank God we don't play make it, take it.
Yeah. Unless we make the first one.
Yeah, that's true.
Shoot 70% like Villanova did against
Holy
Oklahoma,
crow.
Then that would be great. But, you know, and one thing I do want to touch on, though, you know, Wojo is dealing with a lot of fan angst over not making the postseason for 3 years. But only really one of those years is totally on him, because that was this past year. Because the first year, obviously, Buzz was the coach. Second year, I mean, Buzz left him with an empty cupboard, essentially, a very thin roster, and there just wasn't. And then this year, you know, this team was still pretty young, but, you know, this was Wojo's team this year. So we'll see if he's able to turn the corner and get in the tournament next year, hopefully, or get some kind of postseason play next year. But, you know, if you look with this now addition of Howard, the roster that Wojo is building for the next few years here, if you look, and now this is being a little optimistic, but if you look at what Marquette could conceivably put on the floor in 2018-19 when the new building opens. You know, the current freshmen minus Ellenson would be all seniors. So Carter, Cheatham, Sakar, and Helt would be seniors. Howard would be a junior. Brendan Bailey, who is committed for next year but is going to take a Mormon mission, he would be on campus as a 20-year-old freshman. Sam Hauser would be a junior. And then two guys who Marquette is connected to but do not have commitments yet, but they are in good standing with these two guys because they're from Wisconsin. Joey Hauser, Sam's brother, who would be a freshman that year.
Who is a power forward.
Yes.
Likely.
And Tyler Harrow, who is a freshman as well, whose team just won the state championship, I believe. He's a shooting guard who is a highly rated kid who would be a freshman. Again, they don't have commitments from those guys yet, but Marquette is in good standing with both of them. That's a pretty good team, and I only listed nine guys. And so there could be, hopefully, four more guys, some of the taller variety, added to the roster between now and then. So I think Wojo is building for a very strong future. I just hope the fans have the patience And hopefully the Marquette wins enough games between now and 2018 that, you know, a little pressure's off Wojo and he can put together this team. And I think it could be really exciting in the next few years.
Absolutely. It's really going to be a question of, you know, by all accounts, when Wojo won the job, he really wowed them with the long-term vision and the, you know, and what he was intending to do. So I think the powers that be certainly get what Wojo's doing and probably reflect on that, even if, you know, the postseason appearances or the record maybe doesn't get there. They look at what he's doing and they say, okay, you know, would have a longer leash than the fans certainly did. Because, I mean, there are some potentially unstable fans that are you know, upset with him, you know, even to this point, and saying, oh, he really, his seat should be warm, which I think is a little ridiculous at this point.
A little soon.
But I think the one thing to keep in mind, if you look at the roster even right now, again, Henry's gone. If you look at the five, we're set there for the next year or so with potentially more recruits coming, you know, in Fisher and Helt. I have every faith in a sophomore Helt as a backup to Fisher. And then the depth 1 through 3 is outstanding, like you just enumerated. The only gap is the 4, and you know, that's just, you know, given how many holes Wojo had to fill after Buzz's tenure and what was available, it just was a gap that couldn't be filled, and now we're left kind of dealing with that. If Wojo can be successful, you know, in the transfer market this year, then suddenly this is a really solid team.
Yeah, and that's the thing will be interesting to watch over the next month or two is what can Wojo do on the with this last scholarship he has available, which is Henry's scholarship? Because as of now, technically, Marquette is full on scholarships, but Marquette will have one available when Ellenson does make it official that he's leaving the team. So one scholarship to work with, and we'll see if there's any transfers, because, you know, there's always the possibility of a transfer that we didn't expect. If anyone else leaves the program, Wojo may have to fill another spot there. But I think we're pretty set at the guard spot, even if there is a defection or two.
Well, and Brand, like you said, Bailey is signed for next year, but will be taking a mission. So then don't we technically have a second scholarship? We could do a two-year scholarship?
I'm counting as Bailey as not being part of next year's team.
Okay.
Right now, if you include Bailey on next year, Marquette is technically won over. But with Bailey taking a mission, that's one, then you're even, and then with Ellenson leaving, then you are one under.
Got it.
So that's where they are for next year. So we'll see how Wojo does, and again, we'll see if what kind of names pop up. And hey, go Villanova, right?
Yeah.
On Monday night.
Hey, cheer for the Big East all the way. Let's.
I'm glad Villanova has finally been able to shake the postseason jinx, for lack of a better term, that reputation they have of not being able to make it. They've had a great run. I wish some other Big East teams had done the same. I hated that Xavier lost the way they did.
We didn't spend any time talking about that, and I'm glad of it because I don't want to bring that back up.
Overall, I think, obviously, I'm happy for Villanova, and I realize this will be dated after one day, but I certainly hope Villanova wins the national championship on Monday night. That would be great for Villanova and great for the Big East. They have been playing amazingly well, and I really think they can win on Monday.
What's amazing is how well they've shot in the tournament after being spotty, streaky shooters in the regular season. You just hope that they can keep the high side of the streakiness going for one more game.
If they shoot 70%, I guarantee they win.
Yes.
I guarantee it.
If you were going to tell me that, I would put all my money on Villanova.
Yeah.
If gambling were legal.
Yeah. But gambling is wrong. But good luck to Nova. Good luck to the Big East. And this is essentially our last podcast for a while. We tend to do others in the off season as breaking news warrants. So maybe in a month or so after all the dust has settled with transfers and recruiting, we may do another sometime in the spring. And then as schedules come out in the summer, we may do another here or there. We always thank you for listening. It's always been fun doing the podcast. We always appreciate your feedback. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. You can go to Crack Sidewalks is the team handle on Twitter. You can go to cracksidewalks.com where we post the podcast. Leave your comments there. Go to iTunes. You can rate us and leave a comment there on iTunes as you download us there. And we have a Facebook page as well for Scrambled Eggs. Leave your comments and follow us on Facebook as well. I think I get everything, Phil.
Yeah, I think you covered it top to bottom. We've closed out the season, and we're ready to kind of let this season go and start talking about the next season over the next couple of months.
looking forward to what hopefully will be a bright future for Marquette basketball. But until then, hope your off season is seashells and balloons, everyone. Thanks for listening.